The third part of the web here, reach maturation, with the Strut framework, there are exciting new areas like Ajax and Port Federation that become more important. At the execution layer, we talked to you about JRocket being the best execution environment for server-side Java applications. In particular, it's optimized for execution of WebLogic Server. So it's great to run WebLogic Server, and I think all of the top 5 or something like that performance records on the SpecJ App Server 2004 test are all WebLogic Server using JRocket. Okay? So it's totally worth checking out those results to see what sort of things. And you'll notice that plenty of our competitors have even stopped posting. So we've got quite a lead on those guys there. But this is only a small part of the blended story we've been trying to tell you about. Some of the most exciting news that BEA's made in the last 6 months has been its announcement about its support of the Spring framework. So what I want to do now is bring us back into our applications here and start talking about the different layers. We've been through the web layer. Now let's look at the other two layers. Let's look at the business tier and then at the data tier. We'll talk about the data tier after the break. So in the business tier, there are very common problems that are shared across the application. You try to match, the goal of the object-oriented design is to try and match the software assets you create to the business activities that you're using. So you've got your software and your business use in line with one another. These domain objects ideally would be reusable across multiple different tiers. So for example, if suddenly someone decided that they needed to have a mobile client that interacted with your business domain, it would be nice if you already had some domain objects to reuse. Okay? Or if you wanted to use these domain objects in a new persistence technology or in a new service enablement technology, it would be nice if those domain objects existed. You didn't have to rewrite them every time. You just thought about using them in a new way. And that's been the challenge for enterprise Java in the past is the, although design patterns have emerged and at certain points you're like, well, yeah, the business tier, yeah, that's the stateless session facade design pattern. I understand that. I got to start building a whole bunch of stateless session beams. You realize very quickly that there are limitations there. Those beams have to run inside a container that's got a heavyweight execution environment. And that functionality is not portable outside of an application server. It can't be used in lightweight mobile clients or GUI clients, for example. So there have been some complexities that have faced traditional enterprise Java business tier developers. That doesn't remove the demands these business objects may have. They may still need to have security functionality associated with individual domain objects. You may need to assign or ascribe some kind of persistence rule for these individual objects and how they're related to one another. You may need to mark up those business objects that, oh, when you change this one, you've got to change this one as well. Well, changing this one, that's a transaction, right? So you've got to put together atomic units of work. So the challenges with business objects aren't so much that if you want to make them easy to design, because we've already got easy to design object models. The hard part is putting in the infrastructure that makes sense for those business objects in the environment in which you're running them. Now, as I mentioned, the classic EJB 1x, 2x model has been much maligned by the Java community over the years. The truth is, there are some things that the EJBs have done really, really well. In particular, the stateless session beams look really good for remoting, really good for performance, and the messaging beams are excellent. But the other beams, the stateful session beams and the entity beams, have been, well, less than popular, I would say, is the word for them. Now, it doesn't mean to say there isn't a place for them. It doesn't mean to say that you should go and rip out the beams that you spent the last 2 years writing and replace them with something brand new. You can still leverage those investments. But the point is to recognize that you could do more, and there are ways to get more out of a huge amount of concentration. And, whereas in the web tier, there's this dominant standards sort of emerged, and there's all these other, web-enabling projects, like WebWorks and, WebFlow and Cocoon and all those other types of frameworks. At the business tier, it's a clear winner has started to emerge. Okay, and for those of you that haven't been tracking it, Spring has become, in a lot of senses, the popular way to wire together your objects in the business tier. Now, there are multiple reasons for that. We'll talk about that in a second. But it's not the only way. And I want you to think. I want to point out pretty clearly here that it's not an or situation. I don't have to use this or something else. In particular, when we start talking about Beehive and Spring, you don't have to choose Spring Beans or Beehive Control. You can actually use them both together. And in fact, PMC chair for Beehive gave a great presentation at BEA World last year about how to wire up your Spring Beans with Beehive controls. So actually using the markup for Beehive to define a configuration for your Spring Beans. So what do these two frameworks, successful business tier frameworks, have in common? Well, the point is they return the focus to application development to the POJO programming model. Okay? As Jim pointed out earlier, there are certain technological advancements, remember that puzzle diagram? Certain technological advancements that have now arrived that have enabled a return to POJO-based programming to be viable. Okay? And this POJO-based programming actually utilizes frameworks like dependency injection and metadata information like XML configuration files and JavaFied annotations in order to increase the productivity of the POJO programming model. Okay? So these POJOs, these plain old Java objects, are much more than they used to be. A lot of these infrastructure concerns we talked about, persistence, transactions, logging, security, and so on, those are pieces of code that cut across the object hierarchy in common use. That smells like aspect-oriented programming to me. If you haven't heard about aspect-oriented programming, it's okay. It's not for everybody. The point is, it's powerful medicine. It should be used judiciously. So the people that are building these frameworks, like the Beehive team and the Spring team, the guys at Interface 21, those are the guys that need to understand aspect-oriented programming so that you can benefit from it. So, in fact, the lead of Aspect J5, which is an open source AOC framework, was formerly put by IBM, left to go join Interface 21 and do Spring development on Spring AOP last December. Okay? So AOP is hot between these guys. Alright, so let's talk about the two different frameworks. And I'm going to talk first about the Beehive controls, and then we'll talk about Spring. And for those of you that are familiar with the 8.1 control mechanism, how did it work? Well, in 8.1, you went ahead and you marked up your POJOs, right, with Java doc annotations. And then you ran it through a special build, right? And the build read out those annotations, stripped them out, turned your POJO into this magical object, which actually turned out behind the scenes to be an EJB, right? If you guys ever delved down deep enough, you found out that all those controls wound up turning into EJBs running in your server. Okay? So this is a way to put that enterprise functionality, the EJB enterprise functionality, transactions, security, persistence, and so on, into the control framework. Well, when we open sourced all that technology of the controls and created the Apache Beehive project, it was like, well, you're not going to want to run your Beehive controls that you can put in the markup of the control the information about how to connect to that JMS destination, or how to connect to that database, or how to connect to that web service, so that you don't have to write all the client code to talk to that system. What happens is the resource you're interested in talking to actually has a resource proxy associated with it. All the developer has to do is write the control bean wrapper class. The annotations of the properties mark up what information is going to be passed to that resource. And then a public interface is exposed to the client. The client then just calls the method on the public interface. The code inside your bean implementation executes and utilizes the proxy to talk to the individual resource, whether that resource is JMS destination, or whether it's a web service or whatever it is. Okay. This level of indirection means that the client can use operations to talk directly to this resource with this injection right here. And all the developer has to do is write a POJO. The hard part is getting the control implementation part. And that is the job of the guys that run the Beehive framework. Those Apache Beehive guys, that's what they do. They make controls. In fact, not just that. They make APIs to make it easy to make controls. So if you're a vendor and you've got a proprietary backend system, you can make a control and publish it to Beehive to let other people use your control. So it's not your job as an application developer to build this part of the control diagram. Okay? It's your job to define the interface and define the operations of the control. Okay? Now, having said that, there must be a way for us to communicate what the assets are to the control implementation. And the way that they do that in Beehive is they use the Java 5 annotations, these new markup annotations. And this is actually incorporated now into the Java 5 language. That means that in order to run Beehive resources, you need to be running on JDK 1.5. Okay? So that means you can't use some of these this functionality on older execution environments. Now, the JSR 175 standard is now incorporated into Java 5. We're using that information to talk to these controls, and that's the information you should include in your wrapper classes. Because of this functionality, this means that the JSR 175 standard, this means there are now an API, a programmatic API, to inspect upon those properties. Previously in A1, what did you see? You saw the Java doc annotation, and then you did the compile, and that annotation went away and turned into bytecode in all these different objects we created, right? Not with Java 5 annotation. That Java 5 annotation winds up residing in the bytecode of the object you create, and therefore you can have programmatic access to recall that information. Okay? That's very powerful and a huge difference over the standards that we used before. Okay? So, this is how a Beehive control works, and as I mentioned, the Beehive team are the ones responsible for putting together the control implementations and standards for doing it. Your job is just to go ahead and write the logic for the control and utilize it. We're going to have full control support available in workshop for WebLogic 9.2 later this summer. Let's move on now and start talking about Spring. Okay? How many of you guys here have actually built a Spring bean? Okay, all right, so I'll start from the top. Okay? The reason Spring has become popular is it allows you to start thinking about your business objects as plain old job objects. But it's more than just saying plain old job objects. What it does is it removes the association between those plain old job objects from development time to have them associated together at runtime. What this is called dependency injection. Okay? And what it means is, if I've got an object that has another object as one of its attributes, normally, how would I define that association? Well, in my constructor for object A, I go out to the JDBI tree, look up the location of the other object, instantiate it, possibly using some kind of factory mechanism, and then glue it back together and then it's supposed to get a return, right? That's, anybody been used to doing that, right? And then in order to do that, you've got to get, one, you've got to have a JDI tree, and then two, you actually got to make sure that the JDI pod is configured appropriately for your environment. Okay. It's not a lot of work for those people who've been doing it for a while, but it's more complicated than it needs to be. What the Spring framework does is says, look, you tell me what this object is, and you tell me what object B is, and then you define the fact that object A depends upon object B in a configuration file, an XML file. And we'll run those POCOs for you in a lightweight container, and when you instantiate object A, we'll go find object B, instantiate it for you, and then inject it into object A before it's even available for anybody else to use. We're going to inject the dependency back into object A. This means that you don't have to write the JDI lookup for all that functionality. This means that the bean you write here doesn't have server-specific JDI information encoded in it. Wait a second, that means the bean can be used in places other than inside the server environment. You can use it in a GUI tool, you can use a standalone Java virtual machine. But even more than that, it's now just a POCO, and I can unit test it inside my Eclipse tool without even having to start up the server. I couldn't do that before with my old business objects, right? I want to unit test my stateless session bean. I've got to deploy it, compile it, and start up the server, right? Just by making that one change, this dependency injection, it's completely changed the way you can approach business tier programming. Now, if all you were doing was avoiding JDI lookup, there wouldn't be that many benefits to it. But there are additional benefits. The objects themselves run in a very lightweight container. The lightweight container is called an inversion control container. And it, when I say lightweight, it is lightweight. By itself, with no beans in it, I believe the container runs in less than 46K of RAM. Okay? So it's like no server. This is a lightweight container. You can put it, you can almost put it on my old ZX Spectrum from the 1980s, right? But it's lightweight, okay? But what this container does is it does a lot of intelligent things. It reads that configuration file, the application context.xml file is what it's usually called. And this container actually goes ahead, takes care of the dependency injections, but it also allows you to inject other features like transactions, like relationships to persistent engines, like logging. And the way it does this is by the use of aspects on your program. Okay? Spring has its own AOP framework, and it takes care of describing all these different techniques in a simplified way. The architect of Spring is a guy called Rod Johnson. And for years, he built solutions for large enterprise customers. Okay? And he was completely dissatisfied with the way things work, the amount of reuse that had to happen. So he's the one that started this Spring innovation. And the Spring framework is the result of his work. So what happens is the AOP framework can take care of things like transactions, persistence, logging. The dependency injections can place in the application context file, allows you to wire up your beans in an XML file instead of having them hard-coded relationships inside the beans themselves. And these have the side effects that the beans are easier to reuse, easier to run, easier to unit test, and turns out they're also faster than many other traditional methods for doing the same kind of enterprise services. So, here's an example. I've got my business tier client, so this is most likely some kind of action in my web tier, okay? And it's gonna go ahead and talk to what we've got right here. It's actually talking to Spring Bean. Spring Bean is the IDA DAO Spring Bean, okay? Data access object. Now, this item DAO Spring Bean is responsible for talking to some kind of persistence engine. We'll talk more about persistence engines later on today. But this data access object is going like, I've got to talk to this persistence engine. Okay? In order to do that, I'm going to need to know about the data source for it, and I the data source as an attribute as my DAO. Now, instead of actually writing all that in the constructor for the DAO, instead of saying, well, maybe I need, how many of these DAOs do I need? Do I need to start putting them together in pools, or what do I need to do? All you have to do is write the functional logic of the DAO and wire up its relationship to the data source in the configuration file, the application context SQL file. So here I've got my bean. I describe my bean that it's a data source, and I describe various properties of it. And so this actually allows the Spring framework to instantiate this data source for me and use it to connect to the appropriate persistence engine. And then I've got another definition of a bean in this class, and this one's got a property, and this property is called name, that's its attribute. That means it's got a setter and getter called get data source, set data source. And it refers to a data source declaration somewhere else in the application context SQL file. Well, there's the ID tag for the bean called data source. So this means that this DAO has a data source as one of its attributes. And instead of you having to write in the DAO all the information to access the data source, the injection, dependency injection by the container, this container right here, will actually go ahead and take care of instantiating one of those and putting it in your object for you when the DAO is first created. Now, the Spring container does more than that. You can mark up the method invocation type for this Spring bean and say, well, you know what? When we're talking to a data access object, we want to make sure we're preserving the data we're interacting with. I want to make sure we've got preserved integrity, transactional integrity of that object. So you can mark up in the application context SQL file that you want the transaction to be demarcated for this bean and propagated to subsequent resources. And you don't have to change anything in the POCO. You don't have to catch new transaction exceptions. You don't have to catch new container managed exceptions. All you need to do is mark it up in the application context SQL file. The transaction is begun so that when I communicate through the DAO to my persistence engine, the container is responsible for managing those transactions. How do they do this? They did it through AOP. So what does AOP do? It means when you actually invoke a method, the framework will inject a call to an aspect. This aspect is one piece of code. It can be executed multiple times over. So that means I've now modularized my framework in a much more convenient manner than I did with the old EJB mechanism. I've now just got a plain POJO here, and I've got all its relationships, its configured resources, and its enterprise features defined in a simple XML file. Now, the Spring guys actually have a way for you to annotate with using JavaScript annotations as well. It's a sort of a flexible framework for right now. But this common practice is still to use the application context of XML file. Now, VDA noticed the flexibility and power of the Spring framework last year. In Java 1, we announced our intent to support Spring on stage with Rod Johnson. In September, we made that support available. Remember what I said this morning, when VDA says support, it doesn't just mean stick it on top of WebLogic server, it runs okay, and off you go. Okay? You could have done that without VDA supporting it. But support means you can call VDA and get support for your Spring Bean. We'll answer your Spring Bean questions. Support means we've got extensions to the WebLogic management console so that you can see the Spring Beans running inside WebLogic server. And support also means that we've now got extensions in Workshop Studio that allows you to see and create your Spring Beans diagrammatically. So we are supporting Spring Beans not just at the development, not just at the support level, at the phone support level. You can also get support from the tools and from the IDE. Now, the key functionality here is that we published a white paper on dev-to-dev in September about our Spring Bean support and recommendations. It was an application called MedRec, the medical records application. And for those of you familiar with any of the VDA sample applications, it's a common used example. We wrote it specifically to use FreeBee. Okay? We've now, I think today, when you go home and you log on to Dev2Dev, today we published a brand new article on how to use Spring Bean, Spring 2.0 beans. Spring 2.0 isn't even final yet. Spring 2.0 Milestone 3 beans with Kodo EJB3 persistence, OpenJVM persistence. We'll talk more about those after the next break. But there's a brand new white paper today on Dev2Dev that talks about that and gives best practices. If you're really interested in the Spring story, those are the two places you've got to start reading. The things that BEA did were pretty deep integration. We actually wound up giving code back to the Interface 21 guys for them to commit to the Spring project. Okay? We went ahead and provided deep integration for the WebLogic Transaction Manager. What Spring does is it abstracts away your transaction functionality. But by doing that, you don't have to code it anymore. Someone's got to know about it. So what we're doing is, the Spring framework is doing is, it's offloading the knowledge about transactions to the framework, to the container. So what we did was we worked with Spring to make sure that they could, their transaction controls inside the container, the IOC container, could utilize all the power of the WebLogic transaction functionality. And that actually makes WebLogic Server the fastest application server to run your Spring beans on. Okay? The Spring beans, we've also made them in WebLogic Server, we've made them cluster aware. The Spring Bean remoting gives you the ability to have ROI access to Spring Beans running inside WebLogic Server if you want it. We've actually taken and provided JMX attributes and JMX management beans for your Spring Beans so they can be visible inside the administration console. We've got integration between Spring Beans and the Kodo persistence management. That was the announcement in today's white paper, and we'll see a little bit more about that later on this afternoon. We've integrated WebLogic's JMS into the Spring JMS abstraction, and we've also provided web service enablement for your Spring beans. The advantages of Spring over traditional business tier technologies are lower the memory footprint, it's faster for startup, and faster for execution, and you can get all the information about the best practices to use for these Spring applications. So you can get all that information from the Dev2Dev website. Okay. Alright, so I encourage you guys to learn more about the Spring beans. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to flip over to a demo